Good evening, everyone. This is host Terry Lynn Coop, and tonight on the Blue Plate Special, we are serving up Meg Gardner and her hot new book, Fresh Off the Grill, Into the Black Nowhere. This book is fantastic. And just to give you the quick blurb, in southern Texas on Saturday nights, women are disappearing. One vanishes from a movie theater. Another is ripped from her car at a stoplight. Another vanishes from her home while checking on her baby. It's up to rookie FBI agent Caitlin Hendricks, newly assigned to the FBI's Behavioral Analysis Unit, and she thinks the serial killer is roaming the dark roads. So, good evening, Meg. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Terry Lynn, how are you? It's good to be back here on the menu tonight.
Absolutely. I told you when you had a new book out to come on back, and this one is a winner. What's a nice girl like you doing writing these scary books?
Well, there's no point in writing thrillers if they're just going to be about wimps and nerds who do nothing or weak-willed people who just sit on the couch and suck their thumbs. I mean, we have to have stories about people who are willing to take risks and face all the great challenges of life and try to rise to the occasion under the worst, most deadly circumstances possible. That's the kind of book I like to read, so that's what I decided I wanted to write.
Absolutely. And am I correct that this one is kind of loosely based, inspired on Ted Bundy?
Yes. The first book in the Unsub series, which was titled Unsub, was sparked by the Zodiac Killer. So after I wrote that one and I was working on ideas for the next book in the series, I had done a lot of reading about famous crimes. I never want to say that any of these books are inspired by a criminal because I don't think we should find serial killers or any bad guys like this inspiring, but I was completely drawn in and fascinated by the case of Ted Bundy, who was on the surface a really clean-cut, all-American, up-and-coming guy. He was a law student. He worked for the governor of the state of Washington. He seemed to have a bright future ahead of him. He was apparently the kind of well-spoken young man that many parents would have been delighted to have their daughters bring home to Sunday dinner. The only problem was that he had this hobby going on while he was living this seemingly upstanding life, and that was his hobby was abducting college girls and hitchhikers and murdering them and burying them up in the Cascades up in Washington. And
well,
I was just scared and fascinated by it all at once.
Well, in the book, you have a Bundy quote in the front papers that says, "We serial killers are your sons, we are your husbands, we are everywhere." Nothing chilling there.
No, not at all. Of course, he said that from prison when he was trying to, I think, keep the spotlight on himself for every last single second that he could. But there is a deep grain of truth in that. We look at serial killers like they are monsters, and they are, in a sense, a modern form of monster. They don't growl from the, you know, from the woods. They don't swim underneath the surface of the seas like a sea beast, but they are somewhere out there, seemingly normal, yet misshapen and very dangerous. And no, they don't live in, you know, like in the sewers. They don't they don't hang from the trees at night like a bat. They live in suburban ranch homes. They could be working beside you. Ted Bundy famously worked on a suicide hotline for years in Seattle beside a young crime writer named Ann Rule. And she of course, went on to write. She was writing stories about the guy who was kidnapping women at the time, not knowing that the perpetrator was next to her many nights as they sat alone there at 2 a.m., just the two of them on this crisis counseling line. And, you know, what is it? How can somebody like that maintain what they call the mask of sanity? And that's what happens in the book, that the Caitlin Hendricks and her team from the FBI figure out that whoever is abducting these women and they fear killing them is someone who is outwardly very smooth, probably a mm-hmm. professional, will have no criminal record. He is charismatic and a completely convincing liar who can smile and get people to lower their guard so that he can gain advantage over them and then attack and take them in plain sight, basically, which is what Bundy did as well.
Well, and I grew up in California, and I was a teenager in the 70s, and I was tall and thin and had long, dark hair. So I actually know quite a bit about the Bundy case just for that reason. One of the abductions of his that gets me as an adult, but as a 17-year-old might not have, is he approached one young woman pretending to be a cop about
yep.
saying something like her car had been something had been stolen out of her car and he needed her to come down to the station to fill out a report. And then he opened up the door to his Volkswagen Beetle.
Right.
You know, that official
cop car. He was in
plain clothes,
but he was, you know, dressed in a blazer and you know,
yeah.
slacks. And he said, come on down. This is my, this is my undercover vehicle. And I believe that
yeah.
she turned him down because she did not
yeah.
think that
no, she got in with him. And he punched her in the, she was one of the few to escape, like, cause he punched
oh,
her in
okay.
the face, but
mm-hmm.
he wasn't able to subdue her. She was able to get out. Now, again, adult mm-hmm. me, it'd be like, no, I'll meet you down at the precinct, you know, type of thing. But 17-year-old me, oh, okay. You know,
right.
the,
well, of course, that's what he did. And that's what the killer, I mean, I realize this is what people say, how could somebody actually fall for this? Well, we're trained to see the badge, and he flashed a
mm-hmm.
fake badge, I think, at some point.
Mm-hmm.
We're trained to see the exterior. We're trained to see the seemingly innocuous smile or
mm-hmm.
the very confident front of authority. And it does not take a lot of time for you before you realize you need to put your guard back up, that you can put yourself in a dangerous situation. So if your gut is rumbling a little bit, like what is going on with this, you don't have to be polite.
Yes.
You don't have to be gentle. You don't have to do what someone says just because you think it would be rude not to. You can just turn and run like hell.
Exactly. Or start screaming. Well, and is there too this thing that we kind of, whatever it is, we instinctively trust pretty. Ted Bundy was pretty. He was very pleasant looking.
Absolutely. And we're trained to see if someone looks not just normal, but attractive. That very word tells you everything you need to know about it. You're drawn to them.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that, that it's not beer goggles. It's the pretty goggles. And that as well causes people to get in trouble. And that's what in the book, people don't, you know, the cops don't know what this unknown subject, the perpetrator, what he's doing to lure people out of their cars, out of their homes, into the ether from, as they, you know, go to the concession stand at the movies. But somehow he's
mm-hmm.
extremely competent and confident at doing this and manages to get them away.
Well, and it never ceases to amaze me that people still fall for the lost dog routine, you know, or something along that line.
Go anywhere if someone said my puppy's lost?
Not anymore.
Not anymore, but there you go.
Well, and even there was a car will stop in the parking lot, legitimately asking for directions. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
I now very instinctively, I will not get within grabbing distance.
Absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
And if,
especially if it's
and
a
if
man
somebody,
with a sliding panel door on the side.
Yeah. Or even in strangers in public, if they approach me, I'll step backwards, you know, until they're out of arm's reach before I'll speak to them. That type
right.
of thing. And we just kind of develop that as we go through. But I was a criminal defense attorney. You were a lawyer. You know, you're now researching and writing these very, very dark books. Some people still don't see that.
They don't see that, and the killer in the book, as Bundy did in real life, they put on an extra layer of camouflage to disguise their intention. Either again, the mask of authority with a badge, or a mask of harmlessness by pretending to be injured. If you if you're limping down the street on crutches with a cast on your leg or a cast on your arm, you come off as extremely harmless and someone who would be unable to hurt even a young woman who, he outweighs. But, that's the trick. That's the trick that that they can pull on you.
He used an arm cast, didn't he?
He did. I think he may have, and he used crutches. So he may have had a fake leg cast as well at some point. But, looks like, pity. He invoked pity. He needed help. He was the one that was in trouble. And that's a classic con artist ploy, but he ramped that up quite significantly to use it to abduct people as well.
So you took some of these characteristics of Bundy, who's probably been about as studied as any serial killer in history, and kind of wove them in and drew, again, I have to use that word, inspiration for creating this killer in your book.
Yeah, I was fascinated by the personality of someone who would do this. In the story, Caitlin is just desperate to figure out why he's doing this. Of course, that's part of her job. She thinks if she can figure out what is the root of this, then that will help her, narrow down the suspect pool and identify him and catch him before he can abduct anybody else. But, her colleagues are trying to say, if you try to figure out the why. Why is someone like this? As a homicide investigator, you'll make yourself crazy. You need to figure out the how and figure out, maybe what's driving him so far, because that will point us toward, who he might target next. But trying to really get down to the bottom of it, often there is no bottom. So she has to just figure out that, yes, this guy is a psychopath. He is an adrenaline junkie in a sense. He needs a short, sharp shock of excitement to really feel anything at all, and he gets that from from grabbing women, and eventually from getting into a cat and mouse game with her.
So you mean that Caitlin actually has to do the work? She can't just call Penelope Garcia and say that she needs a list of, left-handed, red-haired trombone players who just got out of rehab?
Oh, come on. I love Criminal Minds. We all wish we had a Penelope Garcia who could find us anything in the world within 3 seconds.
They did tend to go to that trope just a few too many times, though.
So I think the FBI would love us to love criminals out there to think that it's just that easy, and that might scare a few of them out of doing anything bad, because they'll think they can get caught. But these investigators really do a lot of very hard work to try to bring the bad guys in and keep us safe.
Well, you use in the blurb for the book, it talks about, is it homology?
Yeah,
did I say that correctly?
That's kind of a social science term. It's the idea. I mean, it's used in archaeology and in biology to mean, where two seemingly unrelated things have a crossover point, where you could trace back two rituals and two cultures because from a common ancestor 4,000 years earlier, or in biology two species with seemingly unrelated have some similar characteristics because they had a common ancestor at some point. And in criminal profiling, it means that at some point the perpetrator's character and action come together. And if the investigators can find that point, they can backtrack from the crime scene, from the action, to try to figure out what the character is of the person that they're hunting, and try to identify them. Does that make
without
sense?
Giving obviously without giving any spoilers, can you give me an example of that? I just have to confess I'm not quite grasping that in the criminal profiling sense.
Don't worry about it.
Okay.
It would be that in the novel Into the Black Nowhere, the victims are found laid out in the woods in white nightgowns. Their wrists have been slashed, but they are posed like they're at rest, like they're Snow White awaiting the prince's kiss. So this mm-hmm. is obviously some scene that has psychological meaning for the killer. And they're surrounded by Polaroids that are sort of set up like headstones around their bodies that feature other victims similarly displayed. So that would be the action. The idea was then that what does this mean to the perpetrator? Can they trace back where this arose, pinpoint other instances where this has occurred? They know that this is something that he wants to carry out. This is the basis. This is a expression of his fantasy. So they just have to try to use that to figure out who he's going to go after, and how maybe they can trace it back to the origin and figure out his identity from that.
Of course, I worry.
I am just blathering, as you can tell. I can shine you on.
No. This is actually very fascinating because I worry, Meg.
About what? I worry about everything all the time. But don't worry about fiction.
Yeah. Let's see. This book it came out on January 30th. So congratulations. You're in like your first week and a half of book birthday. And
yes,
you've been running around the countryside. You've been running around the countryside talking about it.
Which is great. It gets me out from behind my desk where I sit all day and talk to the people inside my head. I get to put on big girl clothes and go meet real human beings and have adult conversations and show my book to them and pet it and tell it it's pretty and it's a good book and all that kind of stuff. So
absolutely.
It's a lot of fun. I went all around Texas and Florida and just got back from Phoenix. So
I notice those are all places that are warm.
Exactly. I ain't no dummy. So,
hey, well,
it's really
right
wonderful.
Now, I will forgive you for not going to Kansas City. I'll forgive you for not coming to Kansas City this time.
I would be delighted to come to Kansas City.
Kansas City is actually a pretty cool place. You have outside of New York and Las Vegas, I would say that Kansas City is was the most mobbed up city in the country.
More than Chicago?
Yeah, it has this incredible organized crime history. I've talked to a couple of retired police officers who were in the middle of it back in the 70s, and it just has this phenomenal history. So yeah, you're welcome in Kansas City anytime.
Well, thanks. But while I was thinking of maybe coming to see a Royals game or something.
Oh yes,
I guess.
And no, absolutely, that can be arranged. And the book has been very, very well received. And you've got this one review. Let me see it here. It's like, excellent. You know the drill. Bookstore near you. Buy now. Thank me later. This guy named Stephen King seems to like your book.
Yeah, I was, I still am blown away. He just dropped that to his followers on Facebook and Twitter out of the blue, and I was scrolling through my Twitter feed and saw that and passed it by, and then like I thought, what?
Wait a minute.
I scrolled back, and I'm like, what? I was I just kind of sat there and drooled on my phone for a few minutes, and then jumped up and ran around, very, very, very excited. It was extremely gratifying.
You click and make sure it's a verified account. You know?
Precisely. No, it was very generous of him. I am thrilled that he loved the book, and it's just really wonderful that he continues to support me and so many other authors and musicians and artists by telling his millions and millions of followers to engage with our work. So thank you again, Mr. King.
Well, it's fantastic too, because I mean, these are real life horror stories. You know, these are monsters that are on a par with Stephen King's monsters, and they're real. That makes them even scarier.
Yeah, and I think that's one reason I write about them, because we want to feel like, at least on the page, and if we study and write and figure out how you could be courageous and smart and daring enough to go after these people, that you could actually make a difference and capture them and bring them to justice.
Well, and even just the phenomenal work the FBI really does. I was talking with George Fong, who is a retired FBI agent, and he was he was telling me of some of his cases and adventures and the ones that really stuck with him and other things. And, you know, just such a nice guy. So he's the nicest guy in the entire world. And, man, he did some shit back in the day. Man.
I love hearing that. Now, when I was researching the book, you know, I read a lot of books by FBI agents, and I listened to some podcasts. There's a retired FBI agent podcast, Jerry Williams, who's a former female African-American agent who now is a writer as well. But she has this podcast about the FBI files, and just hearing the stories of, you know, of the lives these agents led, especially the women, it's just fantastic. Mm-hmm. And in another life, maybe when I'm a lot braver and have better knees and better aim.
Well, that's the same thing with George, because George is Asian. He's of Chinese and Japanese background. So they put him in, you know, like the Tongs and the, you know, going after the Asian gangs and everything like that. It was like, whoa.
He's a real Clark Kent, huh?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Well, one thing that he said on the podcast that stuck with me was when it was coming to be time to retire, you know, and start thinking about his next evolution, he was talking with his wife about it, and his wife said, maybe you'll smile more.
Oh,
I know.
Oh.
And he said that actually, you know, maybe you'll get your sense of humor back. And he said that actually struck him, because he thought he was the funniest guy, you know, funniest. And it was just the weight of the responsibility and the life had affected him more than he'd realized. And now he's, you know, have gone on to a very happy retirement and writes really awesome books too.
Yeah, that's great. But yeah, we should all be grateful that people are willing to do this on our behalf. So.
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. And I've done some research too, because I have an FBI character in my series as well too. So I've done a lot of, you know, dug around in that great vast cloaca of the internet, you know, and found declassified stuff that's been declassified and put out there. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, wow. Because mine's more like outlaw motorcycle clubs, that type of thing.
Right.
And
right.
the information that's out there is just amazing. So,
and
you know.
And again, when you keep using the word fascinating, because it is. And I also want to reiterate that, you know, we've been talking about the bad guy in this book is a pretty bad guy who does some really bad stuff. But the book, I certainly don't want people to think that this is a bleak, dark, moody, distressing story. It's supposed to be a thriller. It is a cat and mouse chase as the Caitlin and her team narrow in on this guy, and they're trying to outwit him and chase him down. And so I really want readers to feel the roller coaster of emotional excitement.
Definitely.
As well as action and suspense. I want people to really enjoy it as they read.
Well, and that's another thing too. You know, thrillers are satisfying because the good guys do win.
Yes, most of the
and
time.
That is satisfying.
It but, has to well, be, you know, the story has to, like, really, you have to deserve the satisfying ending. Everybody needs to work for it. And that's what I try to make sure everybody does in the story.
Well, Mark Graney was telling me that he has people all the time tell him, because he took on part of the Tom Clancy franchise and wrote some Jack Ryan Jr. books. And he had he says he has people telling him that, you know, that they wish, you know, like Jack Ryan was president or and everything. And Mark kind of laughs and he says, well, they don't realize that I also control the bad guys, too.
Exactly.
But that's what's wonderful about thrillers and why I love them so much is that that adrenaline ride.
No, go ahead.
Well, even though when I pop open a thriller, particularly I have to say a series thriller, I'm going to be pretty sure that Caitlin doesn't die. It doesn't mean she's not going to be injured or she's not going to be changed or traumatized, but I'm pretty sure she's going to survive through it. But man,
yeah,
it's
that's
the
not
journey.
A big spoiler.
Yeah,
it
it's
is.
The journey.
It is. What she learns, how she suffers, whether the rest of the people she loves can survive. But
definitely,
that's the fun of writing it as well.
Yeah, you know, yeah, she kind of, you know, it's like her name is on the book, so yeah, odds are she survives, but everybody else is fair game, you know, at that point.
It
so
is,
I know,
I really,
you know,
do try to put them in danger. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, no, your book has been out for a week now. So what are you doing? What are you doing for me now?
I am.
Because it's all about me.
Working on. I'm. Yes, of course it is. It's your show.
Oh, and
I'm
a reader. I'm a reader, so it's all about me.
Okay. I am working on Unsub 3, which is the sequel to Into the Black Nowhere. So I am putting Caitlin and her team into yet another difficult case in Southern California, and you'll hear more about that as the year goes on. The tentative title is The Dark Corners of the Night, and it'll be out, well, as soon as I can write it, early next year.
Well, based on that hint and based on my ridiculous encyclopedic knowledge of crime, I have a couple of guesses. I won't make them, but I will hang back. And when you come back for the third book, I'll tell you whether or not I was right.
Okay. I look forward to that. I've got to leave you in a little suspense. That's my job.
Well, absolutely. Well, and what's funny, too, I mean, even though I practiced, you know, small town law, I'll comment on a news story or I'll tell a story of my own and then I'll look around and realize people are looking at me horrified. That
why?
not everybody lives this. You know, not everybody lives it every day. And that's part of what
that's
you're doing
true.
Too, is you're giving people a safe trip into a really,
precisely.
Really scary place.
Exactly. And that's, I think, one reason we love to read these books, because we do trust that that our favorite authors will take us someplace deadly, but they're holding us by the hand in a way, and that they will lead us out safely at the end of the novel. So that's one reason we love it. We go every place in a thriller that we would never ever dare step in real life, and that's the great enjoyment of them.
Well, no, that is fantastic, and good luck with this new book, and enjoy going out and doing the tours and the signings, because you deserve it. You absolutely deserve to get out of your garret and to see how much people enjoy your work.
I appreciate that very much. It's wonderful.
Where somewhere, like, are you coming to BoucherCon in St. Pete's?
I am. I will be in Florida in September. I've just signed up. I was dithering, but I was really honored and surprised to find out that Unsub, the first book in the series, has been nominated for a Barry Award for Best Thriller, which that's one of the awards that's given at BoucherCon. So I'm going to be there cheering on my book and everybody else's as well. And I hope I will see you there.
And I was really worried too, because I'm not about to work those elevators by myself.
Exactly. You got to wait for me to get on. I'll wear, everybody who doesn't know, that Terry and I met in an elevator at the BoucherCon at Raleigh. Somehow, whenever one of us got into an elevator in this vast series of hotels, the other person was standing there, and it started to be sent like really like a Stephen King novel. But it all worked out.
It was hilarious. It was hilarious.
One of those little hats, like the little elevator guy hats, and.
See, what Meg doesn't realize, though, is that I rode the elevators up and down all day waiting for her to get on because I'm such a fan of hers. So it was great. Now, we're going to be doing some fun stuff at BeCon. We're going to be doing some live remotes and probably some noir at the bar and everything else. So I look forward to seeing you there. Any other conventions or signings in the near future, since that's a ways off?
I am going to be sitting here writing for most of the spring. I will be going to Thriller Fest in New York in July, and then to
I'll see you
Florida
there too.
After that. That sounds fantastic.
I will see you at Thriller Fest. That's going to be my first Thriller Fest. I'm totally jazzed.
Great. Awesome.
With that, I will say take care of yourself, feel better, and thanks for coming on the Blue Plate Special, and I will be talking to you again soon.
Likewise. Thanks so much. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Okay. And everybody else, that's Into the Black Nowhere, which is available at all of your fine, both real and virtual booksellers. Like Stephen King says, go get it. And you know, you always have to listen to Stephen King. With that,
absolutely,
I'll say goodnight to everyone and tell you that this broadcast is owned and copyrighted by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. And you can follow the Blue Plate Special on Facebook to stay up with which of the hottest authors are on the menu every Friday night. With that, I'll say goodnight, everybody, and thank you.